You're tuned in to the HR Bandit podcast, your one-way ticket to the latest and craziest in the world of work. In partnership with Timber Media, Podcaster for India Inc. is sponsored by Adrenaline eSystems Limited.
Hey, hey, welcome to HR Bandit and our own little March Madness. Now, I hope I don't get copyrighted for that, but Bandits, if this is your first time here, a big welcome from Apoorva and me. If this is you returning, we are so glad to have you back here for our first bonus episode of 2024.
Yes, you heard that right, Bandits. This is the surprise we alluded to in our last episode. So today we are going to cover two topics, one trending, another bubbling beneath surfaces, layoffs and the role of HR in startups. But the best part of the episode today is our guest, and I can't keep myself from smiling as I find myself sitting virtually next to Saurabh Nigam. Saurabh is the head of HR from Omidyar Network and is based out of Bangalore. I was fortunate to work and learn from him in one of my previous organizations, Snapdeal, where he was the head of HR, and I've followed his journey ever since. Saurabh, we are so glad to have you here with us. Would you like to introduce yourself to our listeners?
Thank you, Apoorva, and thank you, Ankita, for that lovely welcome. And it's an absolute pleasure to be here. Just to introduce myself, I've been an HR practitioner for about 17 odd years now, and most of my experience has been working with early stage young organizations, growing organizations, working in a very dynamic environment. Currently, I head HR for Omidyar Network in India. Before this, as you mentioned, I was heading HR for Snapdeal as well. I have a technology background as well. I've done my bit of coding for a few years, so I understand tech fairly well, I would say. Yeah, so a combination of tech plus HR is what I bring to the table, and looking forward to this conversation with both of you.
I have been hearing about you for a very long time, Saurabh. Apoorva is definitely a fan. So I can't wait to jump into the topics for today's show. But before we talk about that, I want to take just a moment to acknowledge the birthday of COVID-19. Now, we're not going to sing it a happy birthday song, but I do want to acknowledge that it's been 4 years since the pandemic. Now, a lot has happened between then and now. Saurabh, if I were to ask you to reflect over the last 4 years, right, 2020 to 2024, what do you think is one thing that's drastically changed in the world of work? And don't say remote work.
No, absolutely. And that's a great question. And, if I were to reflect upon my own journey for the last 3-4 years, I would say one thing which I see is a very positive change which has happened over the last 3-4 years is that there's an increased focus and premium being put on our overall well-being and how our work influences it. And the reason I say it's very positive is because it took a pandemic. It took all of that COVID, all of those 2 years of COVID, where to make us realize that, unless we take care of our own selves, everything else becomes secondary, right? And that includes our work as well and how we approach it. So to me, that's one thing which has definitely changed. And I see pretty much everybody putting a lot of premium on their own well-being and, how therefore they would like to peg their work and its influence on it.
Yeah, I think that's something that really resonates with me. And it's interesting to hear that, Saurabh. Like, I have followed your journey of how you took up running during the pandemic and how that's stuck around with you. And it's been phenomenal to see that. And like you said, like, we've seen people all around us probably take those risks or take up those interests that they've been putting on the back burner for long in the quest of this overall well-being. Now, Ankita, I know you asked for what's changed drastically. I think my take on this topic is not drastic, but I'd like to make a reference to McKinsey's latest Women in the Work report from 2023, where it said that women are more ambitious than before the pandemic, and flexibility is actually fueling that ambition. The pandemic showed women that a new model of balancing work and life was possible, and now very few of them want to return to the way things were. they're defying the outdated notion that work and life are incompatible and that one comes at the expense of the other. So that's about me. What's been that one thing for you, Ankita, that stuck?
Well, my pick has to be the data on the distance of one's home from the office. And I found it very interesting. And Saurav, I asked you not to mention remote work because I'll bring it into what I'm saying. Now, remote work, of course, has jumped 5 times since 2020. And this is a huge mega trend that I don't see reversing. Now, for mental health and women's participation in the workplace, I am scared of us having short memories and having forgotten what we've been through. But in terms of where we live, I'll quote the US data, but I see it reflected worldwide. Now, in 2020, the average American lived within 10 miles of their office. And now, in 2024, the average distance of the home from the office is 27 miles. However, what's more interesting in the data is that this distance varies vastly based on income. So the lowest income earners still live within 11 miles of work, whereas the highest income owners live even further away, so more than 27 miles away. And they are the ones who are skewing the difference. Bandits, I want you to know, we'll do our own little poll here. Jump onto Twitter, X, or LinkedIn and let us know how far you live from the office in the comments in reply to our post. But with that, Apoorva, let's jump into our topic for the day. Take us there.
All right. So let me start with something that can never be done perfectly, but needs to be done when the time comes. That's layoffs. The initial phase of the pandemic brought with it quite a bit of panic from companies, especially those in the travel and entertainment sector, as they were cautious in how COVID might slow their businesses down. That soon gave way to the digitization euphoria, which saw several tech companies hire like never before from 2020 to 2022. The Great Resignation in 2021 further fueled the demand for hiring that led to pay ranges in tech see heights that they had never seen before. But then again, with the pandemic slowing down and the digital behavior not sticking as much as was expected, it brought a big reality check for organizations, leading to some of the biggest layoffs in 22 and 2023 after the 2008 recession. So I think I said a lot there, but Saurabh, where do you think companies went wrong in this entire cycle over the 3-year period? And did HR miss the bus by not ringing alarm bells on time?
Again, a very great, good question there, Apoorva. And my take is as follows, right? I think it's going to be very easy for us to sit here and comment that companies went wrong. To me, that's just hindsight. And I'm not going to go down that path of saying that companies went wrong. Because what we actually witnessed over the last 3-4 years were extraordinary circumstances, almost on the lines of once in a lifetime, hopefully. And when you're faced with such extremely tough, unknown situations, you know, whether you are an individual or a company, right, you react to them with whatever little information or resources you have. And sometimes those reactive measures go your way. Sometimes they don't. Important thing is that you keep learning along the way and keep correcting as you go along the way, right? And therefore, I just feel what most organizations did was exactly that. They were reacting to those extraordinary times and circumstances. Nobody was prepared for it, right? And therefore, what we saw, whether it was companies being extremely conservative in some of the industries, like travel you mentioned, there are companies who saw massive opportunities to grow in those times because of, you know, digitization of their products and services. And case in point here being EdTech, right? Now, as ironical as it may sound, pandemic was a boon to many such sectors, right? Hence, it was only reasonable that what we witnessed, it was a massive inflow of human capital in all these sectors during that 2020-2021 timeframe, right? Again, the bottom line here is that organizations were only reacting to the circumstances they were facing, and these were unknown, right? Now, as the times changed, as you rightly pointed out, as the time changed and the world emerged out of the pandemic, a new normal was defined. Ankita, you mentioned hybrid, right? You asked me not to mention it, but I have to bring it here. So a new normal has been defined now. And whether we like it or not, organizations, companies, industries have to pivot again to accommodate this new normal. And what that meant was carving out new strategies, new growth plans, which in turn meant readjusting your human capital plan and requirements, which in turn resulted in restructuring and right-sizing for many, many organizations, right? So where they saw opportunities in 2020-21 because of the change in the strategy itself with digitization coming in, with this new normal, they had to right-size. There was no other way, right? So in my view, the way I look at this, what we have witnessed over the last few years, even after I discount the fact that these were extraordinary times, actually is a normal business cycle, right? If you, you know, expand, if you go back 25, 30 years, there have been many such cycles which have seen a ramping up of organizations and then ramping down. Y2K is another example we can talk about, right? And these cycles will come, right? It's anybody's guess how frequently and how often they're going to come. But as these cycles come and go, there will be periods of massive inflow of capital or human capital in some of the sectors. And then as these cycles go down and there's a normalization which occurs, there will be rationalization and restructuring of organization. That's, to me, that's a fact of life. We got to accept it. It's just that what we saw possibly for most of us in our generation was we were possibly witnessing a cycle like this for the first time. And that's why it kind of hit us so massively as well. Now, coming on back, down to the second point which you asked me, which is, did HR miss the bus? I don't think so, we did, right? And I'm not saying this because I'm an HR practitioner sitting out here, and all three of us are, right? Because to me, that would be harsh and inappropriate, right? And same thing applies to HR professionals, which is they were dealing with some very extraordinary and tough circumstances, right? So instead of saying that, did HR professionals miss the bus? To me, what is more important is that how many of us were proactive enough to understand the changing priorities of businesses due to the times we were in, and therefore how well did we adapt to those situations, and how well did we equip our organizations to equip to those changing circumstances, right? And to me, that's what is more important, right? So therefore, over the last 3-4 years, HR professionals who are on top of their game are the ones who knew that what would it take for organizations to scale up during that period of 2020-21, right? What would it take for them to figure out new ways of working in this hybrid environment? And we're still figuring it out, but you know, people or practitioners who are at the forefront of their game would know how to deal with that. And similarly, the practitioners would know that as this new normal has set in, what would it take to right-size the organization in the right manner, keeping in mind that it should be respectful towards the individuals who are going to be impacted while continuing ensuring business continuity as well. Therefore, in my mind, the right question is not if the HR professionals missed the bus, but really how many of us were prepared and on top of our games to be able to help our organizations navigate through these changing times and the challenges which it threw at us.
That is a really interesting perspective, Saurabh. And there are two things that stood out for me as you were speaking, right? One is, we started by saying what's changed from 2020 to now over the course of 4 years. We've said remote work's been normalized, mental wellness is on top of mind. And then over the last 12, 18 plus months, we've started seeing organizations right-sizing, as you said, right? So one of the things is the language. When I started my career, it was called downsizing. It had a very negative connotation. And then we just changed the language around it to right-sizing, which could be a corporate PR play to try and destigmatize what we thought organizations should not do because they were perceived as volatile, employee unfriendly, and just doing something which was very wrong. So one is the power of language. And then the second thing is we started normalizing so many things, and then layoff, again, because we've seen it happen over a period of time, there is a perception or a possibility or a likelihood that right sizing become a norm, right? So layoffs or downsizing, call it what you want. In the past, organizations would probably explore everything else and then say, maybe we don't go down the route because of the negative press, the negative perception that the industry will have, and employees may choose to join other more non-volatile organizations. Let's just say the juice wasn't worth the squeeze. Now, with multiple layoffs and multiple organizations impacted, it feels like it will not be as rare as it used to be, or right-sizing has become the new normal. I'm curious, in your opinion, do you think that's a good thing or bad?
Yeah. So, I, you know, Where I come from, I don't think it's something which you should brush it under the carpet anyway, right? And to me, right sizing, downsizing, layoffs is just another business reality. That's how I look at it, right? An organization can have a bad year, and a repercussion of that could be on multiple levels, and people is just one of them, right? Your product is not doing well, your markets are not doing well, your revenues are not coming. And in response to that, it's almost imperative for organizations to figure out the strategies to come up the curve, right? And one of the strategies is to right size or to lay off, as you said. And therefore, to attach a sigma to it, in my mind, was always the wrong thing, right? Now, if it is getting normalized, to me, it's definitely good. It may sound controversial, but what it does is it actually normalizes the fact that layoffs happens because business were not able to respond to a situation, to a circumstance in a way that it should possibly have. And therefore, it's going through a time or a period where it possibly cannot afford to have X number of people within the organization, right? And that's a reality. And if that's a reality, there is no other option but for them to right size to do layoffs. And to me, the more we understand this reality, the better it would be for the entire ecosystem, not just the organization, but for the individuals as well. Because it cannot be a stigma to the fact that, you know, collectively as a group of people, which is what ultimately organizations are, there could be bad times. There could be things when things have not gone down well. You know, pandemic being an example as well. And if the organization right now, there's a question mark around sustainability itself, continuity itself, right? Then the obvious and the most logical thing would be for them to right size, right? So to me, it's a step in the right direction that we're seeing a normalization of this right sizing stroke, downsizing stroke, layoffs in an organization. And I hope it remains that way for every single person or every single stakeholder in the ecosystem, right? That's the way I look at it.
I wouldn't agree with you there. Like, I understand if you're doing it for sustainability, like there is no other route outside of, say, letting a large chunk of the population go. And earlier there was a huge hesitation to do this. And I do think right now it may have come to a stage where there might be other options existent, but we're like, this is possible. It doesn't have the same stigma associated to it. So I might as well cut this population. And mm-hmm. I know how you said, you kind of implied that it might be inevitable for organizations depending on the business cycle. And actually, it's ironic. Exactly a year ago, we talked about Nintendo. Now, Nintendo has never done a layoff since they began, like years and years ago. And 10 years ago, I think their CEO, Satoru Iwata, made a statement that that's an organization that will never do that, irrespective of where they are, right? Their priority is making the organization sustainable, so they never hit a stage where they will have to let people go,
right?
At least unless for performance. And right now, I do think that we've reached a stage where, like, it's great that we're normalizing layoffs so that there's no stigma attached when it comes to the individual, right? I think everyone agrees that that's a good thing. But what I want to, like, really push on is saying, is it all okay to now add right sizing to your basket of offerings of, yeah, we're going to cut costs. Here are five different options and all of them are equally balanced.
Yeah. No, so, okay, let me put it another way, right? I don't think any organization worth its salt would like to go down the path of a right sizing because the implications are huge, right? Even if I cut down the noise part of it, which is bad press and bad publicity and, you know, what happens and what gets spoken about you in the media, there are huge repercussions when you go through a right sizing or a layoff exercise. One of them being your brand, right? The employer brand takes a massive hit, right? So to say that it's an easy option, or because it's getting normalized and therefore it is going to be the option which gets picked out more often than not, I think we are simplifying it way too much to say that, because organizations where I have been part of restructuring exercises, where I've helped organizations or advised organizations in terms of going down that path, it still is not the preferred option because there are repercussions. Repercussions of your employer brand taking a hit, you're not really being able to put together your team once the cycle reverses, right? And therefore, it never really is a preferred option in that sense. Having said that, if the sustainability, and I'm going to come back to that point, right? If the sustainability of the organization itself is under threat, if you know as the leaders of the organization that if you continue in this cycle with the same kind of team and the structure which you have, there will come a point of time that you will not be able to do, and I'm gonna possibly, you know, make it sound a little drastic, but you may not be able to pay the paychecks of all the folks too. Then to me, that is the time when you have to go down that path, right? And you rightly said that then it is inevitable and there is absolutely no stigma attached to it because there are no options left then. So to say that because it's an option on the table and it is kind of everybody is doing it, so therefore it is normal to do it, I think we're simplifying it. It is not normal because organizations do take a massive hit when they go through this exercise.
Makes sense. I know I could spend an entire day talking about layoffs because I still think if it's a normal thing, employer brand will not take a hit. Like if everyone's doing it, I'm doing it. But I will move us away from the topic and I'm going to steer us in a slightly different direction. And Saurabh, I really would encourage you and I to continue this discussion maybe on in the comments section of our LinkedIn post or on Twitter. But I want to talk about HR and startups. Now, do you think that the expectation that startup founders have of their HR counterpart or teams have changed over the last few years?
So to your point, Ankita, I do feel, the expectations which startup founders and entrepreneurs have from the HR teams has undergone a massive shift. And last 3-4 years of pandemic has actually kind of accelerated that as well. And, you know, going back to what we just spoke about, I think your point, Apoorva, the question which you asked, did HR miss the bus? No, HR did not miss the bus. But the expectation which now founders and entrepreneurs have that can our HR teams and HR practitioners be far more proactive in terms of understanding the changing needs of the organization based on what is happening in the external world and the environment, whether it's socio-political changes or whatever it may be the case. Can we be proactive enough to understand how the external environment is going to impact our business, our organization, and its priorities? And therefore, how do we continue to contribute our bit towards the building of the organization itself, right? Gone are the days where the expectation is that you would know HR is a subject. And to me, that's almost hygiene, right? You need to know. You need to know what the comp practices are, which will work in a particular sector, particular industry, particular geography, and so on and so forth. I think what's more important and where the expectations are now changing is that how do you understand or what is your level of understanding of the changes which are happening? How it is going to impact my business? And how will you look at your body of knowledge and your understanding of the people practices to be able to carve out strategies which will be able to help me navigate through these changing times? I know I'm not giving you a very specific pinpointed answer, but to me, that's where the expectations have changed. And obviously, that's where we need to be on top of our game to be able to understand the various push and pulls which the business goes through, depending on what's happening in the external environment, and then be able to play it back based on the people practices that we create in these organizations, in our organization.
Yeah, I think if I have to so far think what's been that underlying theme of this episode, it's how as HR professionals, we need to be a lot more proactive and agile than we have been ever before. And it's interesting because Ankita and I spoke about this in our 2024 predictions podcast, how as HR professionals, we are great at reacting, but I think we really need to build the muscle of looking at trends and trying to be ahead of our game. So, and from what you were saying, Saurabh, it felt like in a startup world, in that case, we have to, rather than just listen to the founders and what they think is right, play the role more of an advisor, right? Hey, here's what I'm seeing out there and here's what I think you should be doing, rather than just, following what they want from us, which I think anybody can do. So just to stay there for a bit more, can you give us a few examples or anecdotes where, based on your experience, where you've seen HR really play that proactive role and it's really worked well?
Yeah, so in fact, some of the areas where I feel there's a lot of value which we can bring in is, one question which comes to the mind is, when organizations are ramping up, when they're growing, when things are actually working for you, right? The most obvious thing to do is, if for you to grow, you need to grow your team, right? And one of the questions which I always face and I always ask entrepreneurs is that, is your growth in your business need not necessarily have a linear correlation with the growth in your team size, right? And I see a lot of times that mistake gets made, right? The wind is in your favor. You're looking to grow and looking to grow very rapidly. And the only way you think you can grow at that pace is by adding more people. And to me, that's where the pitfalls occur. In fact, to going back to your point, Ankita, that's where possibly many times we end up going down the path of right-sizing when the wind goes against us as well, right? And I think that's where the role we can play is, do we have the ability to ask that question, what is the right time, right team for us to grow at a pace at which we want it to, right? Are we leveraging skills? Are we leveraging productivity, right, in order to grow 10x without actually increasing the team size by 10x, right? To me, if you're able to have that conversation and then build in or weave in the science based on which you need to grow your teams in order to deliver on your business growth, I think that's where you add a lot of value to the organization, both at that point of time when the organizations are growing, but also when tide turns against you, because you would possibly have a much better sized team than if you were just going with the flow and, you know, increasing your teams in a linear fashion. So to me, those are, but again, I must qualify that by saying that those are not easy conversations. In fact, personally to me, those are some of the toughest conversations I've had with entrepreneurs where I've asked this question, hey, what is the right team you need to have? But to me, that's the place where you really can add tremendous value to your business and to the people and the team which you are putting together for the organization as well.
I love that. And then to the point of growing your team and hiring people, sort of an often quoted joke is like the best time to hire an HR person is the day you start your venture. On a serious note, when do you think a startup should consider hiring their first HR person? And then for this first HR person, what are critical skills that they need to know? Like, is it labor law, the first thing that they should know inside out, or is it hiring practices? Who should they hire?
Absolutely. You know, I have answered this question to many entrepreneurs, and because they ask me this question that, you know, when should I get the HR person? And in my mind, the moment you have your product market fit, the moment you are looking to go beyond that initial group of 5-10 people whom you put together, whether your own employees or consultant, but the moment you feel confident that now you're going to go full throttle into the market because you're convinced that you got the product, you got the service to, you know, go and launch yourself in. Now, you could be thinking about 20, 25 people. That doesn't matter. But to me, the moment you go beyond the space where, you know, there are five of you sitting across the same table and then you're thinking about, you know, taking it beyond that, you need to have an HR person. And the reason I say that is manifold. One, is the point which you yourself mentioned, which is for you to grow, you need to have the team in place, right? And I'm not saying that getting the team in place, you need an HR person only to hire the right person, but also you need to have somebody who looks beyond just the skill part of it, which you will anyway be able to evaluate very quickly, right? But someone who can be a partner with you, who understands you as an individual, and I say you, I'm talking about the founder or the founding team, understand you as an individual, and therefore what kind of individuals will be the right fit for you to partner with you in this journey, you need to have that viewpoint. I think if you do not get that piece right up front, the chances of, you know, people coming on board and then moving in different directions are that much more high. Right? And that's where a role of an HR practitioner becomes very, very critical. As I said, I'm going way beyond just saying that, okay, get me the team in place. That's tactical. That's operational. You'll do it, right? And you can do it. Somebody else will do it. But an HR practitioner, the real value where he or she brings, what he or she brings in, is ability to look at individuals and tell you that this person will fit with the kind of wavelength which you have or not. That's one. Second, I feel why you also need an HR person the moment you are thinking of moving into a double-digit team is to make sure that, you know, you are able to identify your ways of working. I actually kind of refrain from using the term culture because I just feel it's way too abused in our corporate world. But I think it's important for you to keep an eye on how are you evolving your ways of working in your team, in your organization, as you're bringing in more people, right? It's very easy to have a consistent ways of working when it's just few of us, three, four of us, or five of us sitting across the same table. The moment you go beyond that, you need to have an eye and figure out like what is okay and what's not okay when we work together in an organization. And obviously, there are many, many conduits and many dimensions of it, which becomes very important. And again, to do that, having a partner who's able to figure out, who's able to brainstorm, who's able to almost show you the mirror that, you know, what will work and what will not work when you have a certain number of people working alongside you is because very, very important. And then obvious thing, some of the obvious thing which comes in as you bring in team is, you know, what are the right price points? What are the right kind of compensation strategy you should have to be able to go out there and market and talk, you know, bring in the people you need to have. Slowly, you need to start building your employer brand as well, because you can't always continue to hustle and get team on board. So those are all the nuances. Unless you start fairly early on in your journey, you'll always be catching up on it if you were to delay it further.
Thanks, Saurabh. So I think if I have to summarize, looks like a startup really needs an HR person who can understand the founders and their way of working very well, and help them really build a team that can take them from that, like that can really be complementary to those skills that exist in this team at the beginning, while also maintaining the team, the right set of team norms. The other thing that also stood out to me is how you mentioned the technical complexities at the end, which is, you know, how knowing compensation or labor laws. So it feels like those are some of the things that they may not matter as much. But I think what really matters is, can you have those tough conversations with the founders? Do you have experience that would help advise them to build the right set of team? I think that's more important. You can always hire for those technical HR competencies later. So Bandits, if you aspire for a career in startups, in HR, I think you got some scoop of what founders and leaders like Saurabh are looking for.
There's a flip to this as well, right? Which is why you didn't ask me that question, which is, as HR practitioner, therefore, how do you equip yourself to be able to do that, right? What I just said is easier said than done, right? How do you get the buy-in from the founders to be able to have those kind of conversations? And to me, that's more of a mindset and an attitudinal shift thing which we need to develop as HR practitioners to be able to have those conversations. Because otherwise, it's easier said than done to be able to stand your ground and say and have that conversation with the founders and entrepreneurs, helping them understand that the importance of that, you know, the matchmaking, if I may say, while building out the organization, right? So it's incumbent upon us as well to equip ourselves to be able to have those conversations. Otherwise, it's not going to happen, because intuitively, and you know, obviously, I'm kind of making a generalized statement here, but intuitively, for most entrepreneurs and founders, it's not on the top of their mind, right? In terms of people practices, HR practices, building it out early on in their journey of their, you know, building out the organization. And if I were to be absolutely objective about it, possibly it's not wrong as well, because if you're starting an organization, your first port of call would be, how do you ensure continuity and longevity of your of the business which you're setting up as well, right? So therefore, if it's not on the top of their mind, how can you equip yourself and what kind of conversations you can have and what kind of data points you can throw at them to be able to get that buy-in and then move on that journey is something which we as HR practitioners need to build in ourselves.
I love that. So like one of the purposes of the show is to, you know, trigger conversation starters so that people go out and debate them. And I think it's always impossible to get an in-depth, you know, like an end-to-end study of topics. But Saurabh, you've done such an absolutely amazing job of giving us those threads that, you know, people listening can start debating with their friends, be it either in the world of layoffs or with HR and startups, or even what's changed and not changed over the last 4 years. So I'm going to pull us to a close here. But before I go, Saurabh, do you have any last words for the show?
No, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking to both of you. And I must say that the kind of questions that you asked me are pretty pertinent, right? And very pointed. I don't think there's a complete right or a wrong answer on any of these. But I think these are things which, as you rightly said right at the end, these are things which we need to think about. If we want to evolve ourselves as better HR practitioners, and I think it's something which we should go deeper into as this conversation evolves as well.
Absolutely, and Saurabh, I'm going to ask you to, you know, as usual, bring more bandits in along with us on the conversation via comments section wherever you are present. With that, I'm going to get us out of here on behalf of Saurabh, Apoorva, NHRDN, and me. This is Ankita, and we are out.
You're tuned in to the HR Bandit podcast, your one-way ticket to the latest and craziest in the world of work. In partnership with Timber Media, Podcaster for India Inc. is sponsored by Adrenaline eSystems Limited.